Welcome to the Banking Reinvented podcast. Every week, we discuss how banks can progressively modernize their customer journeys and model business operations around their customers. You're listening to Tim Rutten, and I'll be joined by Backbase CEO and founder Jouk Pleiter and other senior banking leaders from around the globe. Ready to unpack how to re-architect banking together? Let's get started.
All right, welcome to a new episode of Banking Reinvented, the podcast for changemakers. And today, it's pretty cool. We're in Scottsdale, Arizona, in the United States, where we're currently hosting Engage Americas. It's our annual event where we bring all of our customers and the complete ecosystem together. And today I'm also being joined by Brian Schneiderman, Senior MD and Head of Payments Practice here in North America. Thanks for joining, Brian.
Thank you for having me.
We're going to unpack a few things here in this episode. And I think especially timely as we are currently releasing our AI-powered banking platform is the notion of AI. So maybe what is top of mind for you today in that space?
Well, it's hard not to think about both the opportunity and the risk. There is an unbelievable amount of opportunity at almost every customer, whether it's account level or transaction level with AI, but there's also a very significant amount of risk that's, I don't think, fully understood yet by the banking system and third parties that they work with.
Yeah, there was a note yesterday, the one you and I talked about just prior, the one on LinkedIn from Jamie Dimon. Mm-hmm. Maybe you can give a bit of a view on what he's sharing with the industry and what the perspective is that he's sharing.
Well, I think the concern is that it's one thing to manage the risk in-house. It's another thing to really understand the risk of third parties. And all the banks have a TPRM, third-party risk management program. Very few really have an AI risk office. And I think what he is suggesting is that everybody really be careful before they start to embrace this too fast. And I think those are very important words. The problem, the challenge, of course, is no one wants to be the last to implement because that would be a dangerous place as well.
So yeah.
Finding that balance is really the key.
Yeah. So I think in a way, you don't want to be on the back foot in this current paradigm shift that's literally happening in front of our eyes. Like all industries are literally gearing up for AI. So I think it's more of a, what is your risk attitude towards the change that is currently there? And of course, there's the whole, it needs to be compliant, it needs to be safe, and all of those good things that I believe are very important, especially in the context of banking. But at the same time, isn't there a formula to still go fast, maybe have proper guardrails in place so that you know what you're up for?
Well, I think the first thing banks need to do is learn. And it's best to learn with back office internal applications. And we have tremendous success at Accenture doing things like extracting code from old mainframe systems, using AI to do that, over 70% efficacy.
Yep.
Great area to learn. It's pretty closed environment. Then after you get done with that, you can start looking at refactoring. So actually coming up with new code. This is an area that I would say most banks are looking at, and a few of them are actually pretty far along. A couple of very large banks that we're working with have done it in ACH and in cards. Then start moving to front office and start looking at things like marketing, which is really an exciting area. We're doing a lot in marketing now as we speak. But then you can start to get into all the customer facing, again, at the transaction level, but also at the account opening level. And doing that with a lot of new sources of data that we can talk about that are available now that weren't available before. I think that's the safe path, I think. But we're not talking years, and that's the challenge.
I think we're talking quarters, maybe months, in terms of embracing this and making a head start into the
industry. Quarters matter.
They do.
Yes.
And to your point, actually, the use cases that you're sharing right now to me are not that far out at all. I think they are here today. There's already great examples that maybe also in your customer portfolio you're picking up on. Coming back to the note from Jamie Dimon, basically saying, hey, there's the internal risk you need to manage. There's also the external risk with third-party players, vendors in that regard. The other view would be, where can you actually acquire enterprise-grade AI capabilities that you're not, let's say, building out yourself internally because it needs a lot of talent, it needs a lot of qualities to bring it to life properly. Do you already see a few, let's say, proven patterns out there or proven players out there? I don't need to hear Backbase here, that's not the point. But I'd like to get a feel for when is it sufficiently mature enough, in your words at least, or in your taking on the market, to actually say, yeah, that part, mature, you have to go. But there are other parts that are maybe less mature. That's where you need to be very cognizant of the steps that you're going to take.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, I don't think maturity is just a state, but it's keeping up with the readiness and the attacks and the misinformation that can come from AI. And that I think is an ongoing battle.
Yep.
So I think you can find somebody that's mature. You can find a platform that's very mature right now. I think it won't necessarily be mature in 6 or 12 months. And so whose responsibility is it? When you think about third-party risk management, does the bank have the resources to do that? I think we'll see an emergence of third parties that help manage that relationship between those who use AI and those who provide AI, because those who use it can't necessarily keep up with and manage their vendors as fast as they should. So it's a tricky answer to a tricky question.
Yeah.
But there are areas that the efficacy has proven out. One of my favorites is in what we call retries. In banking, I focus in on payments, as you know. And we've got several solutions out there from 4 or 5 pretty well-known vendors that look at, let's retry a transaction after it fails. Let's try it for a different date, a different time of day, and it looks for patterns. So, for example, a lot of the card issuers have different algorithms internally that they use for when their cutoffs are, when they do retries. These tools look for the patterns.
Yep.
You say, oh, this is coming through this bank at this time and it's not working, but we know if you try it at this time with that same bank, it'll go through. There's a lot of things happening behind the scenes. That's proven. One very large company had an 80% improvement in cards being authorized that were failing, large subscription-based company. So that area, good example, it's working today.
Yep.
I think it's in a pretty safe position.
That to me also tells me that if you just say AI, like what does that mean? Right? It's a massive container term. There's a lot of different flavors of AI and machine learning in there. What we just shared today on stage as well was there's predictive AI, which is basically doing the data analysis, looking for patterns, and hence informing decisions.
Right.
Not per se executing on them, but informing a decision, and you can take it forward in the process that you have. And then there's Gen AI. And Gen AI is actually the new kid in town, which is a little bit more uncomfortable. Because that's the one that is relatively black box, that needs all the guardrailing, there's hallucination. Right. Like there's all these topics that in banking are not very, helpful, if I say it mildly. The example you just shared is predictive AI, right? You look at pattern recognition, you basically optimize when do the payments, have the highest rate of success, which means you can basically hit your subscriber base better and get your revenue in, as a small example there. On the Gen AI side, I think the marketing angle is the optimal angle today when you talk to the front end of the bank, at least, or the front office.
For sure.
Do you already see cases in your realm, more mid to back office, where Gen AI is able to play a proper role and is not, too risky to be applied at this moment?
Well, I mean, again, it's kind of a gray area of definition. So I think to your point, some of the areas that have a lot of potential, clearly in fraud, there's a lot of money being put into fraud. And yes, being predictive, looking for patterns and behaviors. I think what gets really foggy is not just when you have AI, but when you start to think about agentics. And where you have an agent that's interacting with a, say, customer to say, oh, your card was lost, stolen, or there was fraud. I'm going to go ahead and do all these things for you.
Yep.
Right? So that agentic aspect, then leaning in and saying, I'm calling you ahead of time. I'm not waiting till you call. Right? That's where things get really interesting and, unfortunately, more gray, more challenging. Because I think there is an opportunity for a lot of mistakes and a lot of fraud to happen to the fraud system, or it's actually reaching out. I think the next stage from that is when agents are talking to agents. So I'm out looking for the best mortgage, or I'm constantly, instead of a broker who, you know, maybe works for me 9 to 5, probably spends a half hour a day quarterly saying, can I get you a better insurance policy, a better rate on your investments or your deposit account, better credit card offer. It's out there 24/7 looking for you, unlike a broker.
Yep.
and it knows what you want, it knows what you need, you control that agent, that's really neat. And on the other side, you have an insurance company, a bank, a credit card issuer, and they have agents. And those agents start to look for and find you to make that match. You have agents cooperating with other agents. And then let's remember, you know, if I'm a small business owner and I'm trying to lower my insurance cost, I might increase how much cash I keep on hand at the bank because I'm self-insuring. Now I got to have my agent, which focuses on insurance, talk to my agent, which is focused on deposits and getting a high yield on the money that I'm reserving. So you've got lots of things happening. I think we're only about 24 months off from not only agentics, but an ecosystem of agents. So to your point, what we think is AI today or historically is changing rapidly. It's not just machine learning on patterns, it's actually making decisions. Now, I'm hoping that those decisions are all going to be verified and interrogated before people actually, but humans are lazy. And one of my concerns with AI is we allow the machine to not only make the decision, but we don't spend the time to authenticate it. People do that with Google searches all the time. Well, it must be true.
Yep. I think you're sketching, you're, at least to my taste, you are sketching now the future that we're stepping into as we speak. And that is agentic AI. That is relatively autonomous agents that can cooperate, that can collaborate. With the whole notion of MCP, now you can actually have agents communicating to each other in the same language. So it's opening up a complete variety of what does the agent think it needs to make progress. Well, in 24 months, I think the world looks very, very different already. Going back to the maturity statement, I think this is the part where we're literally just stepping into as an industry, figuring out where you can apply agentic AI. Well, I think overall for now, say 60 to 70% of the work that you're doing, which is AI-based or AI-informed, it's not per se agentic. That is predictive, AI, and it is to a degree Gen AI, but relatively limited usually. I think with agentic, you now put it all in a wrapper that can autonomously start doing work 24/7, 365. Mm-hmm. I'd be curious to see also specifically in, this, in the payment space, like what would be the top use case next to fraud, I think we discussed that quite a bit already, that would really lower the cost on the bank side. Like where's the manual friction that this agent approach could, let's say, solve for?
Yeah, so let's just go through the transaction process here. First, the account opening. I think there's tremendous potential in account opening. The cost to acquire an account, I think will go down by about 50%, 50.
50.
Yeah, yeah, incredible. But also once you have those accounts, the percentage of accounts that will be inactive, because inactive accounts are very, you know, problematic for banks and card issuers in general. Then we'll see accounts and the limits that they can offer be a much more granular focused instrument. So today you have people who have probably more available balance than they should and people that have less. We have a very blunt object that we use, things like FICO score, that don't necessarily convey the level of risk. During COVID, pilots lost their license. Pilots make very good money, some hundreds of thousands of dollars a year. You could lose your job, have a great FICO score, and not have the ability to pay, right? So I think what we'll see is all of those processes that happen, particularly as I mentioned in payments, of onboarding, determining an underwriting, determining what level of available credit they should have. And then when there's a problem in managing the account, I think we'll see delinquencies and defaults go down. My estimate is about 25%. Mm-hmm. Because we'll be using better information to feed defaults and delinquencies. Yeah. And then curing those will be done better. So I think it's going to be throughout the whole process. But I think initially, to the comment you made, all that upfront marketing, that front end, I think that's going to be really where we're going to see the most benefit. Who do I need to go out to and offer, more curated, products like credit cards and other types of consumer loans do.
In a way, that's also the concept that we introduced, which is the customer lifetime orchestrator. How do you orchestrate the full life cycle of the customer? Mm. How do you attract them? How do you activate them? How do you expand them? And how do you retain them? And throughout that full life cycle, there's different use cases, how you can literally help them grow, do well on their end so that their financial wellness is in a good spot, but also very much grow the customer lifetime value for the bank, mm-hmm. right? To make them profitable customers overall. I think there is a lot of untapped opportunity with the sense of how many dormant accounts do you have today that are costly, they're not active, they might still have a certain level of deposits with you, or maybe the salary slip still comes in via that particular account, but their daily banking is elsewhere. Mm-hmm. What happens if you bring those back home, if you unlock that value once more? Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of opportunity there to
100%.
Bring them back, serve them better, and indeed overall apply not only AI, but also agentic AI to streamline it in a way that's competitive to the other players that are fully in this movie already.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's the B2C side. On the B2B side, on commercial and corporate banking and payments, we have this brand new product called real-time payments. Happens to sit on a new ISO standard, right? As everything is moving to the new ISO standard, in that case, it can carry thousands of pieces of information with the payment. That's information we can use for AI. So if you think about, a traditional wire or a traditional, check or ACH, you've got a handful of characters you can put in there. Now we have thousands. So I can look at not only who paid, where they paid, why they paid, what they paid for, but I can look at the conditions of the transaction. So let's think about healthcare. How successful was the procedure? What was the outcome? And outcome-based care is really important. But if I can carry outcome-based care using the ISO data from the healthcare industry, I can say, how much should I pay as an insurance company if this procedure didn't go as planned for no reason that was, no fault of either standard, deviations of the outcome, but maybe we did something wrong in the hospital. Quality of care tied to payment could drive the healthcare industry to a completely different level of responsibility, accountability, and performance improvement. But that applies to others, like oil and gas. There is a standard for marine-grade fuel. That ISO data can now flow through our payment rails. And all that data that flows through that can now be used for AI, which loves that kind of data.
Yeah. It starts with the data, right? That's the part where, exactly. Also in banking, do you first of all bring all the data together so you can tap into it? It's a good starting point. Maybe coming back to also the event today, if you look around you and you talk to the ecosystem of bankers that we have here, we now talked about the technical implications a little bit. We talked about it needs to be safe and what have you. What do you think of the mindset of the industry? Like, is the industry ready to really step into leveraging AI appropriately, or?
I don't think so. I think there are two factors that worry me. Mm-hmm. We talked about the risk and that most have not really thought about an AI risk office. But the second is the people side. And I think we have the potential to do some amazing things to make people much more effective, much more powerful at work with AI. We also have the potential to leave a lot of people behind. I think a lot of industries, including ours in consulting, are pyramids. We've got a lot of people at the top. We have a few people at the top and a lot of people at the bottom. I think that's going to change. I think we're going to get a diamond that is very flat. And we're going to have fewer and fewer people at the top making decisions, making those big decisions, because it will be enabled, that decision, like BI on steroids, effectively, will be made by fewer people, confidently. And then at the bottom, of course, we talk about coders and testers. I mean, AI is doing that, right? We're doing that a lot today at Accenture and a lot of our clients. And so you end up with this middle of really empowered people who are trained, skilled on how to use AI to do their job better or to do different jobs within the organization. Not enough of these banks are thinking about that. They're really not. And if you think about a bell curve, there's going to be a lot of people left behind on the left side of that curve. And the middle's, going to be a lot of time and money has got to be spent retraining and educating people. So those are the two things that worry me most.
They are really good points. To me, that sounds like creative destruction, which is one of those academic concepts where a new technology enters the world and literally jobs are going to be completely displaced, a variety of jobs. And I think there's many in banking that are just too manual, labor intense, which can be done incredibly well by AI across the whole range of use cases. At the same time, there's also the opportunity that new roles are being, let's say, stood up, which in a way, I'm stuttering a little bit because it's not an easy point to make, but it basically means that people need to lean in. They need to have a growth mindset, they need to embrace that this is the new paradigm. You need to learn very fast, you need to get comfortable in learning very fast. If you don't, you will get left behind. And I think you will get displaced in whatever type of role you are in. I can at least share it from my perspective, leading a marketing function at large in a business like Backbase. If you don't step into what AI can now do for you as an organization, as the individuals within that, and the work and the craft that you have, the competition is going to overtake you. They're going to be 10 times more effective with lesser people. They will flip the pyramid of their organization, and they will go for a level of pace that is just unseen. And I believe it very much also applies to banking, to your point indeed.
Yeah, it's a societal problem.
That's why I was thinking like, okay, how do I say this, you know, a bit more casual? Actually, you can't. It is major.
And all of this is happening at a time where there's a lot of uncertainty, even outside of banking, that impacts us. You know, things like tariffs and the impact on small businesses. And so while they need technology and they need the help of banks more than ever, I think the banks are struggling to figure out their role in, AI and technology. Let me give you an example. A lot of companies are going to have to reroute their supply chains. And that means all of the payments that they do have to be quickly, rerouted, redirected. Yep. They might be dealing with somebody today on wire, international wire, and all of a sudden now they might have to deal with a domestic provider that doesn't use wires and is on, you know, ACH. And so, as a microcosm, as an example, you can't change what's happening around you, let alone, you know, providing the capabilities and the tools fast enough to help what's going to happen, I think, to small businesses over the next 12 months. I think it's going to be challenging. If a bank can do that, they're going to really lead.
Yep.
If they can't, they're going to be part of the problem, and that these small businesses that are already struggling don't have banks that can provide the kind of, you know, solutions that they need.
They'll probably go elsewhere. There will be other providers that can deliver faster and, you know, support the way of working today.
And they may not be traditional banks.
They will not be.
That introduces more risk to the financial system.
Very likely. It will be the big fintech and it will be the digital challengers.
Right.
Clearly.
Right.
Now, let's end with the positive, because there's a lot of, this is also the reality check for the industry, right? This is really what you're hearing, what I'm observing in the market. At the same time, it's a very exciting time. Like, how often in your professional life do you see these types of changes that completely turn the world upside down?
Mm-hmm.
So I think, at least from my perspective and the Backbase perspective, we really believe that this is where change makers can really step in and step up and change the business, change the bank, change how you serve your customers, your members, change how your employees go to basically do their work day in, day out, and supercharge them, which is one of the points that you also made. So I think there it's also a bit of a let's share the call to action that this is the moment to lean in. Even with all the uncertainty around you, there will be someone next to you who will go for, let's say, leaning in and learning fast, which will outpace you. I think there the call to action is mostly, at least from my end, next to all the uncertainty, this is the moment to act. At least that's how I feel. How do you feel this?
I completely agree. I want to go full circle to what we talked about in the beginning. I think this point in history is going to be measured by quarters, not years. And the banks that can move to what can we get done, what can we pilot and learn from and build the safety nets in quarters, not in years, is going to be really important. And I think those who get it right, I mean, you mentioned Chase. Jamie's a very big proponent of AI. He leans into it. Even though he's cautioning everybody, he's also leaning into it. You know, that is a pretty good, mindset to have. There are many more banks who are on their back heels and saying, well, Y2K. You can think back to the days when we all thought the sky was going to fall and it didn't. I think that's a very dangerous position to be in. And I do think that the banks that are leaning in are going to really succeed. At the same time, there's a big opportunity to consolidate this industry. There are thousands of institutions, and we don't need thousands in the U.S. Obviously, it's a little different in Europe and other parts of the world. But here in the U.S., we don't need this many financial institutions. And so I think a lot of things are happening at the same time, but if you're a lean-in bank and you're doing some of these things, scale, you know, data, all the, this is a perfect time to take advantage of all that.
And in this case, I don't need to summarize the episode for once. That's great. Brian, thanks for joining the episode and sharing all of your insight.
Happy to do it.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Banking Reinvented, a podcast by Backbase. Make sure to follow both Jauke and myself on LinkedIn, where we will be sharing key insights about our journey towards modernizing banking.